Jack Diamond. Thank you for coming by, ladies and germs. It's 32 seconds after the hour of 12, and this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day, live from the plushly appointed, yet the power is off. Let me just say that the entire station right now is being run off of a power strip. You know, a power strip is one of those things you buy at Fred Meyer for $3.99. You plug it into the wall, and it's got like six little outlets so you can run your Christmas tree and two skillets and a George Foreman grill and a leaf blower off of it. That's what everything in the studio is being run off today, because the power has gone off three times in the last 30 minutes. I swear to you, on all that is holy, about 5 minutes ago, Tim was preparing his news with the aid of a flashlight.
A good heavy policeman's flashlight.
You could kill somebody with that. I bet Will gave that to you. Is that from Will?
I got it from Will.
Yeah, okay. Something that's lethal and that can double as a bludgeon with which to kill intruders. Certainly came from Will.
I hear the power keeps going off because of overweight baby boomers using the elevator.
I don't know that that's been proven yet, but it seems like a fair supposition.
Why can't they just walk up a few flights of stairs? Be good for them.
Because their aging hippie hearts would come apart like day-old meat. All right, if you'd like to be part of today's program, there's no guarantee that the phones are going to keep working. I can never figure out...
Or anything else.
I never know whether phones are tied to electricity or not. Does it puzzle you that phones work when the power is out? Does that seem like it shouldn't work? It's one of those things that doesn't...
Phone would work.
I'm not asking for an explanation. I mean, it's enough for me that it does work. But if you notice, whenever the power is out in your neighborhood, the phones still operate, which seems to defy all kinds of logic. In any event, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You'd like to email us. The computers are working at the moment. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. It is Monday. We are broadcasting from beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. In just a moment, we'll welcome to the program Mailman Chris, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson radio program. And I will list the things that we're going to attempt to get to on today's program. At the end of the show, I will owe a push-up for each thing not gotten to. But in case you hear sort of a loud whooshing noise or just sort of a in place of this broadcast, it first happened about 30 minutes ago. We were all walking around, and suddenly we were just plunged into doom and blackness. It's like that episode of MASH where they're having to do the operations outside with the Jeep headlights that Radar rustles up right before he's supposed to go home because his Uncle Ed died. It's exactly like that, except that we're here.
So is this happening all over the building? Because I feel bad for the employees in COIN, because you're like three basements down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's anybody down there anymore.
Yes, the robotic cameras that work at COIN, they're having a real bad time of it. The automated voicemail system with which they've replaced the receptionist. I'm sure that's hating its day, too. All right. So, but about 30 minutes ago, the lights all went off. Sarah's computers all went down. My computer went down, our refrigerator, courtesy of Viso, more of everything you need. That turned itself off, too. All the emergency floodlights, you know, those spooky lights that they mount to the hallways, you know, by the exit doors and whatnot, those all kicked on. So, when I came in here, where's the flashlight? So, I am holding, you hear this? Right there, this... That is a huge...
You're going to crack somebody's skull with that.
You could kill somebody with
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. It's a lethal weapon.
This is a full-on policeman's maglite with which Tim was doing the news.
They could put an end to all the protests.
I am very...
With one swing.
You could kill hippies by the dozens with this thing.
I don't think they allow those anymore.
I'm not giving this back. I'm going to keep this, and I'm gonna swing on the next guy from Critical Mass that tries to block me on the way home.
You can ask Jim Roop about this, but I think LAPD police officers can't use those anymore.
Oh, no, man. This would crack your skull like an eggshell. That's fantastic. But no lie, I came in here, and Tim had a flashlight in his hand, was in the middle of a pitch-black room here at CBS Radio, one of the largest corporations in Earth, preparing his news by the aid of a flashlight. So there you go. That's what's happening at CBS today.
The big time.
All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend, Mailman Chris. How are you today, sir?
Good. The power's on where I'm at. Is the power on where you are?
Thank you.
Temporarily.
for the moment. And they've actually, as soon as the power kicked off the first time about 35 minutes ago, the engineers came in, and if you look at the floor, you can't see this, of course, but if you look at the floor of our studio right now, this is like when Lycus always talks about what a hole he's broadcasting out of. It's a tiny little production closet. And it doesn't seem possible. You know, Tom Lycus He's the big time. He's a huge... I mean, that's a, it's a national radio program. It's been on the air for over a decade. It generates millions of dollars revenue every year, and they've got him in a room that's just... They've got him in a room that's the size of a phone booth, and it's apparently just filled with mold. And it doesn't seem possible, but it is. I assure you, I've seen where Tom Likas works, and it is so. And so you go several hundred notches down the CBS radio food chain to where, oh, we are. You come in here now, and covering the floor like so many snakes in the Well of the Souls in Raiders of the Lost Ark are just power strips. All leading, it really is just a fire hazard like you've never seen before. Because all of these power strips are all sort of daisy chained to one another, and they're all coming out of a single outlet in the wall that's somehow remaining on. So, if and when the power goes off again today, this radio's, because that won't keep the lights on. Here's what will happen. If the power here at AM 970, if the power, we're in the Coin Tower downtown. A lot of people think we're in that KUFO building, which is a phrase that I have difficulty forming. KUFO building. A lot of people think we are there. We're not. We are downtown in the Coin Tower, as Tim Riley always says. And so if the power goes off here in the Coin Tower, the lights will go off in the studio. The only things that will keep working are the board that Sarah, or the mixing board that Sarah runs, the console that keeps the sound going out, and I think that's it. And my computer probably will keep going. We will be doing the show, though, from as Henry Blake once said, from the middle of a real big, dark, empty. All the lights will go off. But covering the floor here are power strips that they are trying to power everything off of, which means that we will continue to have power, but something will almost certainly be bursting into flames in the basement of the Coin Tower, after which we will all die, towering inferno style. Tim will be playing the part of O.J. Simpson.
I like that.
All right, so there you go. So that's what's happening today at CBS.
Because you asked.
In the news with Rick Emerson.
All right, Chris, are you ready to take down the list of things that I'm going to attempt to get through during today's broadcast?
I am, and starting off this morning, you are at 23.
23. See, are you sure about that?
I am positive, and I believe Dan at LiveJournal got that as well.
Okay, thank you. Dan at LiveJournal, by the way, where they are now doing a sort of like a recap of this program every day. You don't really appreciate how ludicrous and pointless this show really is until you see it broken down into a bunch of black and white bullet points on a website where it's a whole lot of, like, Rick mentions lawn darts. You know, Tim gets something out of the refrigerator. Sarah breaks wind. You know, and then the show's over. All right, here's what we're going to get through today. First and foremost, I got to say this. I have in my figurative hands, there is no guarantee, of course, the CD player will be functioning properly or that anything will have power later on.
Right, when it's time to play it, all the power is going to go down.
Yeah, presuming that we're actually able to operate the equipment here, I have in my hand the new single from Storm and the Balls. Not to name drop, but I was over at Storm and Davey's last night, and Davey himself, he handed it to me, and he said, "Now, my friend, I give the watch to you." And he handed me the CD, and I have it right here. So it is from the forthcoming, though indefinitely delayed, album Blue, which is the next album coming out from Storm and the Balls. But I have in my hand the new single from Storm and the Balls. We will play that today following the Storm Watch, which I think is coming up around 1:15, 1:20 or so. We'll be talking to Storm Large from Rockstar Supernova, after which we will be debuting the new single from Storm and the Balls. What else? Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian, is going to join us today. Let's see, what else? I got a little something from this week's installment of Radio and Records Magazine. We'll get to that. We have a Clown Watch. We got to get to the Clown Watch because we were supposed to get to it like Thursday, Friday, and we never did. Religious Nutcase Watch, and if you've been following the news at all, you know that it's fantastic. Probably the greatest Religious Nutcase Watch. It's the best Religious Nutcase Watch ever. That's not the one about that guy who hammered himself to a crucifix in, like, Guadalajara a year and a half ago. Because that sort of is the gold standard for us. Plus some other shenanigans and chicanery. I believe we have Lisa Goddard today. Is that true?
So I hear.
All right. And she's in Damascus still? Something. And Jim Roop will be here to talk about the stuff and things. It's basically just so I can get his mailing address so we can send him a copy of the Lowe's new CD, which is rife and replete with samples from Mr. Rick Emerson. I listened to that whole CD all the way through this weekend, and it's like every other track is something for this program. It's fantastic. All right, that's what we've got. Chris, have you got all of that, sir?
I do. I have the Stormwatch followed by the Storm single. Peter Carlin, an excerpt from Oxford Magazine, the Clown Watch, the Religious Nutcase Watch, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, and other shenanigans.
Yes, there you go. And other shenanigans. I can retrofit that to mean whatever I want, by the way.
Absolutely.
So we're all clear on that. All right, we will check in with you at the end of the program and find out what I've gotten to, what I've not, and I will owe a push-up for each item not followed through on.
All right. Talk to you then.
Thank you, sir. There you go. That's Mailman Chris. All right. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you?
Okay.
I was kind
fine.
Of looking forward to doing the show in the dark. I'm kind of disappointed. But
I could turn the lights off if you'd like.
No, that's just creepy.
Then it's just weird. Then
who's going to hold this flashlight? Scotty.
Scotty J will be doing that.
Scotty J doesn't know what he's going to be doing this week. Scotty J, I'm sorry in advance.
Oh, yeah, I should tell you that, by the way. Scotty's working on a couple special projects this week. One he knows about, one he's going to be told about. Scotty's working on something kind of special right now. At least he's attempting to, and the power's not going off. Pardon me. Scotty is editing something down for us in the other room that we're going to be playing later on. It's going to be fantastic. But every time it's like a 5-minute audio bit that he's working on, and every time he gets about a minute into it, the power goes off and he loses everything on his computer. So he's working on that right now.
I went to the Brewers Fest this weekend, though.
Here's how I know that you went to the Brewers Fest, because I was at my brother's wedding and my phone rang. And of course, it's that, and I'm glad you called me, by the way, because I was during sort of a quick rehearsal beforehand, and I would have completely forgotten to turn my phone off.
Didn't I say that on the message? Like, I hope you forgot to turn your phone off.
Oh, man, and it's like, I got the new, and this is not a plug, but I mean, I'm very happy with it, so I'd like to talk about it. I got the new Motorola Q, which is great. Q! But it's got the loudest speakers. It's like these loud, crystal clear stereo speakers. And I mean, it carries. I mean, you could hear it a good 40, 50, 60 feet away.
Even me? When I call.
Yeah, exactly. And I can, you know, and yeah, even Tim Riley can hear it. No matter how deaf you are. Oh.
It's time for the...
Oh, good Lord, we've been... Well, never mind.
What happened?
The gods have intervened.
No, I guess the gods wanted us to start. No, it's okay. Keep going.
Oh, it's going to be the best show ever.
I know.
I can already sense today's show is going to be genius.
You're distracting me.
How am I distracting you?
I don't know.
I'm just here doing the same kind of crap that I always am. It's because the power went off. Anyway, my point is that I was...
I don't know how... That was really fast.
I was at the wedding rehearsal. It's because it's already like 12 after. I was at the wedding rehearsal this weekend, though, right before the wedding itself, and my phone rang, and it's Meatloaf. And it's just that, what you know, it's Ellen Foley saying,
well,
stop
actually
right
Meatloaf.
There. I got to know which. And I realized, and it rang in the presence of my wife, and then I realized what an awkward-sounding ring it is. And
was this during the vows of the wedding?
No, we were doing a little quick rehearsal because... Because I missed the Friday rehearsal because I'm a tool.
You look very unhappy in that suit in that picture.
I was very unhappy in the suit in that picture. I shouldn't say that. It was a glorious, splendid occasion.
It was an evil grimace.
During which two souls became one. I don't know. I got to operate under the assumption that they're listening. During which two souls became one. Two lives were joined together in a glorious thing and ziggy dig dig.
It looked like a scowl wearing a suit.
It's a scowl wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a tie. No, we were kind of doing it. It was like half. If we're getting so ahead of ourselves. I missed the rehearsal on Friday because I'm a tool. So on Saturday, they had to quickly do another run through just for the aid of the idiot older brother, which is me. I'm sort of the Johnny Drama of that of the family. But the phone rang, and it started going, I'm at the Brewers! I'm drunk! You know, and it's like,
I wasn't drunk,
God.
When I called you. I met a really cool listener named Tim, though. He was very excited to meet you, so...
The strange thing about that is I also met a listener named Tim McCarthy, who was the lead singer and band leader for the band that played after the wedding.
Huh?
That did the obligatory, like, back-to-back. Kokomo and We've Only Just Begun. But the guy who led the band, who was cool, by the way, I do have to say he was great. He's just a guy named Tim as well, so.
I also met another listener who was in a band.
His name is Tim?
Jimmy. No, whose girlfriend screamed at me as she was running out of the club.
Oh, we should tell that story later. You told me about this beforehand.
Was fun.
All right. And then
Jimmy, cool. Girlfriend, not so cool.
And, you know, and then I met a girl whose associate, everywhere we go, we're meeting people from bands. You know that band Ditch Licker?
Yeah.
I met a girl at the wedding, and she's like, I swear to God she said this. This is not me being, you know, like, look at the glory of me. She goes, are you? And then she made quote marks. She goes, so are you Rick Emerson or are you Rick Emerson? As though, she thought I was the Coonhound guy, apparently, from Atlanta.
Oh.
And I said, I'm the radio. And she goes, oh, I'm with that band, and I don't know what that means. I mean, I got a suspicion I know what it means. But she said, I'm with that band, Ditch Licker. And I said, oh, we kind of know those guys. And I really don't. I've just sort of heard of them. But I sort of feigned hipness. Like, oh, yeah, Ditch Licker, rock, you know, or whatever. And then she sort of flitted away with some cake. This is the most gripping program ever. Here's Tim Riley working on
I want to hear about the wedding gifts.
The following stories for your edification today.
That's you.
Oh, no, it's
me.
It's you.
I'm so confused here. I'm,
well, it's because the power keeps going off and none of us know
I'm
what we're doing.
I'm into these wedding stories and all of a sudden I'm called upon it.
It's all very tearful.
Well, Mel Gibson drops just one bomb and is hated as much as his bolo. Boy George will pick up trash in the August heat. Lindsay Lohan's mom's Coulson studio for scolding her to stop partying and get to work. Willie Nelson says the Dixie Chicks got a raw deal.
All right, so there you go. So, and we have Lisa Goddard coming up at, I think, 1. Clyde Lewis will
He's
be coming up. Bottom of the hour and so forth. Anyway, I had some story I was telling.
What kind of meal was served?
Now I'm all...
Was it an open bar?
There was like...
What was the song for the first dance?
I'm wrestling with emotions right now. Well, I can say... Here's the thing. It was on East Larch Mountain Road, which is in Corbett, which is kind of, you know, in the gorge. Anyway, but it was like this big house. It looked like the Von Trapp family house. You really expected to see... you expected to see Christopher Plummer, like, unfurling a big swastika in front of it at any moment. No offense. But no, and it was run by these guys who were just, like, real hard-asses. Just real, and it's... And I don't think it was a state law. I think it was just them being jerks about it. They really cracked down on the alcohol and in what you could have and what they would serve and whatever. So it's basically just a little bit of champagne only. Although it was, you know, there was kind of an all-you-can-drink champagne thing going on. But so there was that and so forth. I've lost interest. I don't even care.
No, you're just scared to step over a line.
No, I've just realized that I'm going...
You don't know who's listening, who's not.
Nobody fell down like in America's Funniest Home Videos.
I've just realized that I've spent like 10 minutes talking about a wedding that no one in the audience attended and that no one cares about.
Everyone does.
I care.
This is the wedding of the season.
All right, well, let's go to the City Desk and then we can follow with other wedding questions later. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
From higher down the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, with a faulty power generator that could go off at any second. This is the City Desk Newsbeat, Tim Riley reporting. Back to more wedding stories in just a minute, but first...
some other news.
Some other news here. Residents of all faiths are joining in Seattle after a fatal shooting in the city's Jewish Federation office Friday. A suspect was allegedly angry over the U.S. military cooperation with Israel. This Seattle police officer was calling in that the verbal altercation was over, number 3.
All right.
It's under control. The female that has left in the vehicle, unknown, and the male has walked off also. That's not the male there, is it? Okay. All right.
And so what, this is the guy, what he killed,
a shot.
Killed one and wounded 5 or something, and some other nutcase anti-Semite guy? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you go.
President Bush insists on what he calls a sustainable end, whatever that means.
That's like peace with honor. Yeah. All right.
Like that's going to ever stop.
Clean coal.
He's speaking in Miami, which is just as violent as most Middle Eastern countries. Thank
you. Did you see that Orlando has the highest crime rate in the country now?
Oh, it's horrible.
And the best part is that my wife flew into Orlando the day that statistic came out. She was there last week because blah, 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 family reunion, da, 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 I didn't want to go. And so she was there in Orlando with her mom. And the day she landed in Orlando, that story came out about Orlando now, most dangerous place. And I mean, with great glee and joy in my heart, I emailed her the entire story right to her cell phone so she could read it as she was landing.
Apparently, somebody got killed asking for directions there, too. Anyway, the president says his administration is working hard to find enduring peace in the Middle East.
We're going to work with our allies to bring before the United Nations Security Council.
Exactly what allies do we have left at this point? It's basically just us and, like, the army from Reykjavik, I think. I don't know if there's anybody else.
Oh, Romania, wasn't there? We have 16 Romanians.
Romania? I barely know you.
We're going to work with our allies to bring before the United Nations Security Council a resolution that will end the violence and lay the groundwork for lasting peace in the Middle East.
There's a half of an applause there.
Okay. All right. Who is he speaking to? Is he just at a laundromat somewhere?
He's in Miami.
Just appearing wherever anybody won't run. It's just some guy in a park. But you, sir, let me talk to you about my plan. Hello, please.
Please put down your gun and listen to me. Well, some people may be feeling down after they spend several days with their... Oh, this could happen to us, too. A lot of people are feeling down after they lose their power. Dr. Richard Wenzel, a professor of psychology at Washington University, says people left in the dark for more than a week could begin to get cranky and depressed.
They will in some people, but they won't in most. Some people are very good at remembering grievances. Most of us forget them.
All right.
Are we sure that's even about this story? That's like that woman from the Textiles Advancement Society or whatever the hell it was last week. All right. Well, there you go. So try to avoid being in the dark for a week, I guess. You know, speaking of being in the dark, I was watching this documentary on Alcatraz this weekend. And the great thing is,
they were talking.
I know it's not as gripping as talking about a wedding that nobody went to.
Not like Alcatraz. I've been by there.
No, has anybody been to Alcatraz? Have you gone there?
Been by it.
Oh, man.
I've
you
been
gotta,
on it.
On the way to Sausalito.
Oh, you got to go there. You got to go to Alcatraz. It is fantastic. Especially if, like me, you grew up just being fascinated with it. And I've watched all the, you know, obviously Escape from Alcatraz to Clint Eastwood. And then Alcatraz, the whole shucking story with Kelly Savalas.
The Rock with Sean Connery.
Yes, also that. It's so cool. On this documentary, they were talking about, you know, I think it was Bill Curtis, as all of those documentaries aren't. Prisoners who routinely misbehaved were sent to the hole, a place of desolate silence and isolation. And they do that thing where the camera goes right into one of the isolation cells, and it was exactly the same cell that I went into when I toured it, where it's creepy, man. They throw you inside, and then they shut that door behind you. And it's really unnerving. And it's just, it's pitch black, no sound, no noise, no, it is just sensory deprivation of every kind. The story has no point. It relates to nothing at all.
What flavor of icing was the wedding cake?
The wedding, see, here's let's talk about wedding cakes for a second. Because I wish to alienate everyone who listens to the Rick Emerson program now. Make them long for something better. So, yeah, to recap, I went to my brother's wedding, and I will not go on and on about the saga of the suit, because you've all heard it. But suffice it to say, if you go to rickemerson.com,
you can, like a match with the others.
You can see a photograph of myself, my brother, who apparently looks like me, although I don't see that. And everybody else says he looks like me, but I don't see it, frankly. Maybe we got the same unpleasant nose, I suppose. But other than that, I don't really see any similarity. Although he does make me look like I have a full head of hair.
Now, is this the younger brother?
My younger brother, yes. He is standing to my right, or, you know, to camera right in the photograph. You look at my brother, though, it makes me look like I got a full head of just thick, lustrous, voluminous hair.
He looks better fed than you do.
He doesn't look manorexic.
You guys look nothing alike.
That's what I'm saying. But Joni's all like, oh, you look so much alike, it's creeping me out. And I don't see that at all, because I look like my dad, and he looks just like my mom.
There is a similar bone structure.
I suppose, in the sense that we both have skeletons. We're both endoskeletonic. But other than that, the camera girl is sitting there, and it's a combination of us trying to look tough and Goodfellas-like, and also just the fact that we're cranky, because we did 90 minutes of photos before the wedding, then 90 minutes of photos after the wedding. I mean, it was just, and I don't mean this as a knock on my sister-in-law, her family, on my brother, anybody. Photos that no one's ever going to look at. No one. Who will ever...
We're looking at them now.
Do you ever see... that's it, though. This is only so I can prove I had the goddamn suit and that I didn't stick out. I do have to say, in all, you know, with all humility, the suit looked pretty good on me, though. It did. I looked
decent. How long
decent.
Do you have to listen to this?
Tim was the one asking for more wedding observations. Now you're stuck
I was asking
with it.
About the cake.
Okay, I'll get to the cake, smart okay. guy. You just wait your... I'll get to everything in due process. But suits always look terrible on me because I'm me. But the thing I've learned is I've spent so long now just wearing a Ramones t-shirt and ripped jeans everywhere I go. I have set the bar so low that it's like you put me in any suit that even quasi fits and I look fantastic. I look like I just stepped off a runway somewhere. So it's just all about lowering expectations, kids. That's the thing. Under promise, over deliver. But so we're all standing there just hating it, just being in the sun, just sweating and just stinking and just hating every single moment of the whole thing. And then it was finally done, let me ask you this. What is the thing with rich people, that rich people, does this seem like a paradoxical thing to you, that rich people aren't capable of serving adequate amounts of food? It looks like the more money you have, the smaller and tinier and like less delectable the food actually has to be. You know, if you got no money, what do? You got no money, you go to one of the starchy grandma's buffets, right? That's like $4.99, and it's like 10 pounds of ham and like a whole pie that they'll give you. Would Monsieur like ham or beef? I'd like both, please. It's like when Clyde and I went to Chinook Winds to see Rickles. We're there, man. We go to that buffet. It's like $7. I came out of there with like 40 pounds of food in me. But you go to this wedding, which, and my new in-laws are people, as they say, of means.
Oh, that's good.
It's good for my brother. Not so much good for me because I'm not too sure that I'm on their favorite person list, nor have I ever been, nor shall I ever be now. But either than my sister-in-law and her family, they've got a little bit of money, and but so as a result, you go to this wedding, and it's like a rich person's wedding, so of course all the food is tiny. It's tiny, and it's like the weirdest, worst combinations. Literally, they were bringing around these things on little tiny toothpicks. It was a little tiny, expensive, like, shellacked toothpick on which was a piece of melon, some prosciutto, and like a mozzarella thing. Now, I don't know in what world ham and melon go together. The answer is in no world. But at like a rich person's wedding, somehow ham and melon and cheese all need to go on a skewer together because it's fantastic. So, anyway. And then the cake. Let me make an observation about cake, since Tim asked. And you did ask, by the way.
Twice. So
this is, you are now hoist by your own petard,
not
sir.
Twice.
Let me say this about cake, and this is not just in the realm of weddings. I sound so gay right now. This is not in the just in the realms of weddings, but in all life. As Casey McCall once said, women should never be allowed to be in charge of cake selection. Cake selection should always be the man's responsibility. Let me tell you why that is. Because women left, and I know I'm generalizing, but just bear with me, left to their own devices, women never get a cake that anybody actually wants to eat. Women get a cake and it's always some fruity, yogurty, pudding-esque concoction. And it's always layered with two or three sort of gelatinous fillings on the inside. You know what I'm talking about? And Sarah's wrinkling up her nose in distaste because you're probably the exception to this. I would hope that you are because you are the exception to most.
I think it depends on how much money people want to spend on the cake.
Why does it matter? Why does it matter? Why don't you just get a cake that somebody wants to eat?
I don't know. I guess it matters to the couple.
Did the silverware match by any chance?
No, the silverware, of course, matched because, you know what, everything was like bright and shiny. The silverware cost more than my car, of course, but women always order cakes, and you know what they do? When women are allowed to order cake by themselves, they turn cake into something that you do, eating cake into something you do to be polite. Because it's always a cake that, again, it's always got some bizarre, you know, gelatin filling on the inside, which is, you know, if you want gelatin, eat a pudding. You want cake, get a cake.
We'll get some Little Debbie cupcakes and pass them around.
See, I would be fine with that.
Nobody would know. Put them on.
I would be absolutely okay with such a thing. I will say this as a final wedding observation. Who am I kidding? It's not final. But as a final wedding observation.
We're going to talk about dancing later.
For now. Don't even get me started on the dancing.
Did they do the hokey pokey?
Tim.
No, don't even get me started on the dancing. And to answer your question, the first song was The Way You Look Tonight by Frank Sinatra. But
at least it wasn't Feelings by Morris Elder.
Oh, no, but you know what? But
oh, that's where a second.
I don't want to knock the guy. No, and I should be very clear, but I don't want to knock the guy because he's a listener.
He was no Scotty.
It is no, no, no. The band that played, they were very good. The band is that was played, and I will say that the band did not pick the set list. Someone, I believe my in-laws, because my brother pointedly noted that it wasn't him. So somebody picked a set list, and I, you know.
It's like American Idol.
No, it's you look, and it's, again, it's
can
like.
Can you give us some sample tracks from the set list?
I think I can, actually.
They should have put them on CD and offered them for sale at the end of the ceremony.
I'm picking up on your sarcasm. I think I actually threw it away so that I wouldn't be tempted to read it and poke fun.
No, good for the band, though, because they probably got paid.
No, the band was good.
Money.
It was a great band. I will say that. The band, I forget what they were called.
You've got to do what you've got to do to make ends meet.
No, I'm not knocking the guy. It's good money. They were great players. They were great singers. All I remember is Kokomo. That's the only, but it's like, really, but it's like, what else do you need to know? You know what I mean? That's sort of that's the canary in the coal mine. You're at a wedding and you hear, in the back, you hear that. And of course, they're all like, really, really white. Not that the Beach Boys aren't, but you know what I'm saying. And they don't have John Stamos there, so they're crippled to begin with. But in the background of the wedding, you just hear a lot of Aruba, Jamaica, hey, I want to take you. You know, and it's like, what else do you need to know? That tells you all you need to know right there.
I would have asked for Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree if they were going to do that.
I love that song. I
should
have
been
the first time
wedding,
this
Oh, and they played that John Denver song. Hey, it's good to be back home again. Yes, it is, people.
They didn't do Rocky Mountain High, though.
No, good at that. They did not. Yeah, so there you go. I had some final observation I was going to make, but it's gone now.
God, this thing is scary.
Don't even know what it is.
This is just like Martha Stewart living, isn't it?
It really is. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. I did have some other observation I was going to make about the wedding.
Also, did Jamon put everyone in their place?
Pardon me?
By her attendance? Didn't you Didn't your mom say that she would not dye her hair?
You know what you are? You're an instigator, Tim Riley. That's exactly what you are. You are
just trying to get you to spit it all out now so you don't have to talk about
you're
it
you're a rabble-rouser. Well, there was a request made upon my mother that she color her hair. My mom, who was not in the ceremony, color her hair for the benefit of the photographs. My mom declined to do that, and I think she looked fantastic. My mother is a saint. All right. Let's see. What are we doing here? Oh, we got Clyde Lewis here. Should we do that, and then we'll go back to the news?
We've really got a break.
All right. Well, we'll break. Then we'll come back.
Yeah.
Then we'll go back to the city desk, where we will again get nothing done. Later on, Peter Carlin's going to be here. We've got the new single from Storm and the Balls. The brand new single. I hold it in my hands. Exclusively on the Rick Emerson Show. We will have the brand new world premiere of a new single from Storm and the Balls. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Rick Emerson radio program. Hey, update, it's 12:38. The lights are still on. The power has not gone off again. Maybe we should light some candles in here and do the show that way. When the lights went off, we were illuminated solely by the refrigerator brought to us by Viso. More of everything good. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, what a great show so far. Maybe at the next listener party, we can watch videos and look at pictures from the wedding, and then we can finish up with some of your baby photos. Ha ha. Thank you, Dave. All right, thanks. All right, we'll get some more phone calls here in a second, other emails, etc. We got more from Tim Riley at the City Desk later on, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Peter Carlin, and we have the brand new single from Storm and the Balls. We will be world premiering that later on after the Storm Watch. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. The king of something and the duke of blah-da-da-blah, demon, we're all going to die. Clyde Lewis, Ground Zero, how are you, sir?
I'm actually the king of weddings, if you recall.
Oh, are you? That's
sure.
True. Well, I suppose if we're ranking by number, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've had some of the most embarrassing, if not the most interesting wedding ceremonies.
Best Clyde Lewis wedding story ever that doesn't involve you pawning your wedding rings. Is it not true that on your second wedding, that you were actually divorced before the pictures even came back?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. That's love right there. There was also
a warrant out for my arrest as well. from my first wife.
Attention, ladies, this prize catch is now on the market.
Yeah, it was funny, but yeah, and my car had flat tires, and so we had to come off because I couldn't get it to drive. It was just a horrible.
And you had that, and I don't mean to poke fun, but at your second wedding, didn't you have that cake that literally it went from table to table to table like a bridge?
Yeah, it had bridges and a big fountain in the middle, and then we had a punk band called The Bachelor's Play, and then we went to Los Angeles and had a wedding. We had a mariachi band.
How much did the whole thing cost?
About $40,000.
Is that when you were doing mornings?
That's
that's the sign of a morning guy right there. I got a little money. It'll last forever. Let me get into debt. That's morning guys. They're all such fools. Myself included. You get a morning gig and you always think that sweet river of cash is never going to end.
Yeah, you always think it's going to come all the time.
Yeah, you're just like, I'm going to go buy a car too. You know, and then that's like the next week that you know that's when they flip to like smooth jazz or something. Yeah,
exactly. That's what happened. Really, no.
I just have this image though of you bitter, divorced 2 weeks later. The whole wedding is the whole marriage is a disaster. You're sitting at home and then you get the package from UPS. Congratulations on the glorious event. Here are your photos.
Well, actually, it was Sam Prigg did a big old a video of it, of White Rabbit Productions. We brought in like this video team to do a whole video of it, and they put microphones on us, and it was really kind of like one of those moments we wanted to have. It was about a $450 wedding video, and it just fell apart at the end. It was horrible.
Fantastic.
Because she was like so into, you know, wanting to be seen, because she was kind of a ZCMI type model type you know, doing pictures and stuff.
Oh, ZCMI, that's a Mormon, not a Mormon, but a Salt Lake store. Yeah.
Well, it's not even in existence anymore either. So.
It's like a Meyer and Frank of the Mormon set.
Pretty well, yeah.
Was her whole thing about wanting to be Mrs. Clyde Lewis from the radio?
Yes, it was, actually.
See, kids, you get into radio, you too can have a $40,000 wedding that falls apart when you lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's, every radio guy has that story, too. Baby, you love me to the end of time, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, and, man, one bad book.
Right. I know, it can be really bad. It can be really bad.
Well, what's up, brother?
Well, I don't know. You go to my MySpace account, you're able to take a look at something that happened to me. I went to an opera recital.
Why?
Sure. Well, because Sadie Gregg sings opera.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And she's a very good opera singer, and I went and saw her sing, and it was an amazing event. And the thing that was interesting about it was that the pew that I was sitting in this church, is a Presbyterian church over near Lloyd Center, had two clowns embroidered on the cushion.
Excellent.
And the clowns were handing crosses to each other. It was the
scary. Ooh, that's creepy. You gotta get a photo of that.
Yeah, I'd like to. In fact, Sadie said that she might do it. I have a guy at work that said he might do it, but I wrote a whole thing about it in my blog, in MySpace.
Jesus loves clowns.
Actually, it's called A Clown in My Pew, and a lot of people subscribe to my blog now since I've written that because they said it's one of the funniest things I've ever written. But it's kind of a scary, funny, kind of an oogie type of thing.
I think that ought to be our. We don't really have a station mascot. Don't you think we ought to have an evil clown as our station mascot?
We had a station mascot, you and me. We did our.
Well, we had a clown. We had Lucky Butt the clown.
And Lucky Butt was scary, funny, and
low budget. We had a low budget clown when Clyde and I used to do this morning show called Drive-By Radio, which was worth its weight in gold. We had this low-budget clown named Lucky Butt, who was fantastic. I had to bring that back. We had to bring that back.
Bring back Lucky Butt, but the only problem was that Lucky Butt the clown actually wound up being arrested, and so we didn't post his bail.
Well, that is true. Well, we just let him.
He's probably hating us for the rest of our lives because, why did he get arrested?
I still have the ticket, by the way. Okay, here's what we should recap. So when Clyde and I did mornings in Utah, we had a mascot, not for the station, but for our morning show called Lucky Butt the clown. And he was a low-budget clown because that's all we could afford. And so he was huge. He was 6'4", 380 pounds, and basically all we could afford was like a ratty rainbow wig and a trench coat.
Mm-hmm.
And so he looked like a flasher clown.
Yeah.
And we had this thing where we had him go hand pork products to people at Temple Square, which is where the temple is in Salt Lake City.
We rented him out for a dollar to parties. He was a dollar clown.
But he got busted by the cops at some point for handing out raw meat, and I think he wanted us to bail him out, and we never did.
No, we didn't.
Is he still there?
I just remember he's probably still there. Do you remember the time he jumped out of the car and scared those Japanese tourists? He goes, "I am Clownzilla, fear me."
Yeah, and
all
there was
Japanese people going, "Ah!"
You know, yeah, there was a bunch of Japanese tourists who were because Temple Square, whether or not you're Mormon, is a big tourist destination. It's sort of the Disneyland of Salt Lake, and
exactly.
There was a bunch of Japanese who were getting out of their like tram or, you know, their bus or whatever the shuttle to go to Temple Square, and this low budget clown, 6'5" or whatever, with a flasher's jacket and a rainbow wig, jumps out. "I am Clown Zero, you know, and it's like, and then threw pork at them. It was pretty great. Those were the best of times.
Those were the best of times, yes.
Right.
You bring back the Lucky Butt. I think it'd be hilarious.
Yeah, we'll bring him. It's time for him to come back. What's going on at Dante's?
Well, actually, last week we actually had a very, very, very hot show. It was huge. There was new people that came in. I love seeing new people after the shows, and we were talking about what was going on in Israel, of course, and it got into the anti-Semitism, argument, and saying that, you know, we better be careful about the things that go on here because there may be some things that might happen that might be frightening and like people, you know, going in and doing damage to synagogues and things of that nature. We said, make sure that you look out for your Jewish friends because, you know, things like this could happen. And then the situation happened in Seattle. And we were just all shocked by that. Also, another thing they have is the Morgellons disease that I talked about a couple of weeks ago has now made the mainstream because drugs are reporting about it. Now they're going to investigate.
Oh, that's the creepy disease where you have carpet growing out of your face or something.
Oh, exactly. Carpet growing out of your skin. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that Ground Zero talks about like 3 or 4 weeks before it makes the mainstream. And, you know, if you go to the Ground Zero Lounge, you're pretty much getting in, you're getting news stories that don't necessarily make the mainstream. You may think they're crazy and weird, but some of the weirdest stories, as you say, are the real ones, and they're true. One of the things I want to focus on tonight's show is how CNN became CBN over the weekend, and I don't know, you know, cable news network as opposed to the Christian Broadcasting Network, and it's because of the fact they're doing this series now on CNN called Is This Armageddon? Is This the End of the World? And I think it's really scary when CNN, who's supposed to be a credible news source, is now turning into the CBN.
And that's okay. We had Jim Roop following a woman with, you know, on Friday. Jim Roop from CNN was on our show Friday. He spent half an hour following a woman on the highway for no real reason other than that the wind was blowing her skirt up.
Oh, my gosh.
So CNN continues to be the bearer of the gold standard for journalistic integrity. It's true.
I mean, there are a lot of other things we cover, too, but in the meantime, because everybody, you never know what's going to happen. And I also heard rumor that Sean Penn was actually at Dante's.
No, it's true. We had confirmation from some people who were there that Sean Penn was kicking it as they was
and,
chilling.
And from what I understand, he wants to come to Ground Zero Lounge because he hears it's a very highly charged political, conspiratorial type show, and he wanted to come and kind of participate in the show. So you never know who he may show up. He may not show up. Who knows? But we've had a number.
Maybe he'll sing a duet with you.
That'd be nice. I'd like to sing a duet with Sean Penn. I think it'd be great.
And so that starts at 8 o'clock tonight?
8 o'clock tonight,
Dante's right downtown, and then you can find out more at ClydeLewis.com.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
You have a bye.
There you go, Clyde Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Hey, Scott, wait, hold on, let me, hold on. Oh, let me find the appropriate...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
He always comes in right at the same time.
I don't know what's better, is the actual sound or just the fact that it works and that you actually appear when I play it. That's genius. It's like a great gazoo kind of a thing.
Hello, Scotty J.
How are you?
Hello there. Do you have the TMZ Gibson story?
I do. Let me...
Could you bring that in and then I... That way.
Yeah.
Scotty's put together something special for us today, as he does every day.
All right.
Scotty's put together. We have this this story. Let's get this call in the meantime. Jesse, hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
What's up, brother?
Not much. I was looking at the reality portion of Rockstar Supernova, and I found out what Zaire is going to sing tomorrow night.
Wait, hold on. You did or you guessed?
No, I found out.
You found out what Zaire is going to sing tomorrow. Now, don't reveal it yet. The question is, do we want to know? I should admit at this point. Now, I will not reveal it.
Okay.
But I should say at this point that I know what Storm sings tomorrow.
No, okay.
I will not reveal that, but Davey told me last night, and he made me ask like three different times. He's like, do you want to know? Seriously? Do you want to know? And I was, yes, tell me. That's why I can never go to those websites, because I have no willpower. So
if you just go to the Rockstar website and watch the reality portion, you pretty much find out. I mean, it's not a spoiler by any means.
Yeah, but that's one of those things I don't do. Well, do we want to know what Zaire sings?
Yeah, who cares about
it? All right. Screw her. What does Zaire sing?
You're going to be pissed, man. I had to call you because I was pissed. Too.
Great.
The bad part is that she's going to ruin all these songs for us when we hear them in the future.
When I hear that, everybody hurts. Yeah.
Think of the Power Ranger.
All right. What is Zaire sing tomorrow?
867-5309.
Oh! Well, at least it's not the Ramones or something. That Sarah mouthed the word Ramones at me. Well, that sucks. Because if you've seen Bigger Than Jesus, which is not a plug, but if you've seen that, it's a movie I did, last year, the one-man show that I've been doing, there's a great sequence that it revolves around that song, around the Tommy Two-Tone song. So, that sucks. Well,
you had to know, brother.
Thank you for sharing your pain, sir.
No problem.
Right, there you go, that's Jesse. All right, 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, here's what's coming up. We got Lisa Goddard from Damascus. Later on, Jim Roop will be joining us. I got to find out where to mail him. I listened to that whole CD from The Low, by the way, our good friend who was in on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, it's fantastic. If you're a rap fan, you really ought to pick it up. It's great. But every other track, it starts off with us talking about him. It's got Tim doing his old, I want to press my chocolate body against you. It's got Roop. It's got it's got some other sample of me saying, like, once you go black, you never go back. I don't even know where that's from. And then it ends with Tim and I doing something or other. If you listen through it, it's got a whole bunch of great stuff. So, what was my point? All right, talk to Roop so I can figure out. I got to mail him a copy of that. Peter Carlin is going to be joining us. Storm will be here for the Storm Watch. We got the new single from Storm and the Balls and so forth. Are we ready for the Religious Nutcase Watch?
I am indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your Religious Nutcase Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Show.
TMZ.com has learned Mel Gibson went on a rampage when he was arrested Friday on suspicion of drunk driving, hurling religious epithets.
Now, did we all read this story repeatedly and with glee over the weekend? You haven't heard this?
No, I mean, I knew he was arrested, but I didn't hear the full story.
Oh, my God.
See, let's recap, by the way, because we, so on Friday, right as the show was ending, we heard, you know, Dateline, you know, was it Malibu?
Yes, it was.
Dateline Malibu, Mel Gibson arrested for drunk driving, and we were just, and you actually said, like, how much better could this be? Like, please. And I said, jokingly, see, all we heard is that Mel Gibson was arrested for DUI.
And that was all the information.
That's all we heard. And then I prayed here on the air to Jesus, Allah, to the deity of anyone's choice. I prayed on the air. I said, please let him have gone crazy. And just resisted arrest and just been a nutcase when they arrested him. Not in a million years thinking that it would have happened. How could I be that lucky? I haven't been that good in my life. Why did Jesus want to help me? God doesn't care about granting my wishes. And plus you figure I was giving him the benefit of the doubt, like a fool. I was like, well, you know, he probably just had one too many at lunch, you know, whatever. You know, one too many martinis or something. He weaves a little bit, looks like, you know, and he blows over the line, whatever. In no world did I conceive that this story would become as great as it has. All right, so go ahead. And what we've done now is, this is complete. By the way, we should note, Dan, that we are not fabricating this. This has been corroborated. I have in my hands a copy, which you can't really read, but a copy of the sheriff's report. This has been corroborated, allegedly, by the sheriff's department themselves and by the arresting officer's notes. This is not fabricated. What we are going to do is read the story and recreate Mel Gibson's arrest with the help of Scotty J.
Well, TMZ has also learned that L.A. County Sheriff's Department had the initial report doctored to keep the real story under wraps, but we're not going to do that here. According to the report, Gibson became agitated after he was shot on Pacific Coast Highway and was told he was to be detained for drunk driving Friday morning in Malibu. The actor began swearing uncontrollably. Gibson repeatedly said,
"My life is f***ed."
Wait, he repeatedly said what?
"My life is f***ed."
Law enforcement sources say the deputy, worried that Gibson might become violent, told the actor that he was supposed to cuff him, but would not as long as Gibson cooperated. As the two stood next to the hood of the patrol car, the deputy asked Gibson to get inside. Deputy then walked over to the passenger door, opened it. The report said Gibson then said,
"I'm not getting in your car,"
and bolted to his car. The deputy quickly subdued Gibson, cuffed him, and put him inside the patrol car. TMZ has learned that Deputy Mee audio taped the entire exchange between himself and Gibson from the time the traffic stopped to the time Gibson was put in the patrol car, and the tape fully corroborates this written report.
So there was an audio tape of this in addition to a written report. So this is not fabrication. This is a recreation of the actual audio tape of Mel Gibson's arrest on Friday.
Once inside the car, a source directly connected with the case says Gibson began banging himself against the seat. The report says Gibson told the deputy,
"You motherfucker, I'm going to f*** you."
The report also says Gibson also continually threatened me, saying,
"I own Malibu. I'll spend all my money getting even with you."
The report says Gibson then launched into a barrage of anti-Semitic comments.
Jews. The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew?
The deputy became alarmed at Gibson's tirade as it escalated and called a handforce sergeant to meet them when they arrived at the police station. When they arrived, a sergeant began videotaping Gibson, who noticed the camera and then said,
"What the f*** do you think you're doing?"
A law enforcement source says Gibson then noticed another female sergeant and yelled,
"What do you think you're looking at, sugar tits?"
We're told Gibson took two blood alcohol tests, which were videotaped, and continued to say,
I'm sorry, what?
And then continued to say,
I
guess this is a bonus here.
No, wait, hold on. Continued. I've lost my place in this sea of profanity.
Mm-hmm.
I think he continued to say,
"My life is f***."
But I'm sorry. Mel Gibson continued to say,
"You mother f***. I'm going to f*** you."
So there you go. This is a part of our the AM 970 noon news hour, by the way. This is an accurate recreation.
That's a pretty provocative.
This is we are now presenting this as a news service, a sociological service from the AM 970 news desk.
Gibson was then put in a cell with handcuffs on. He said he needed to urinate, and after a few minutes tried manipulating his hands to unzip his pants. Sources say Deputy Mee thought Gibson was going to urinate on the floor of the booking cell and asked someone to take Gibson to the bathroom. After leaving the bathroom, Gibson then demanded to make a phone call. He was taken to a payphone, and when he didn't get a dial tone, we're told Gibson threw the receiver against the phone. Deputy Mee then warned Gibson that if he damaged the phone, he would be charged with felony vandalism. We're told Gibson was then asked and refused to sign the necessary paperwork and was thrown into a detox cell.
All right, so there you go. Did you think, on Friday, when we had this news that Gibson was arrested, did you possibly think, in any world, did you conceive that this would become such a fantastic story?
No.
And here's the best thing about this. No, I mean, you know, we've often said that the Democrats are on the inside, what the Republicans are on the outside. Well, you know, the inside and outside of people and organizations is subject of some discussion, especially Mel Gibson, whose Passion of the Christ film was derided by many people as being anti-Semitic. By the way, Mel Gibson's father is a Holocaust denier. Mel Gibson's father claims that the Holocaust is fiction and never happened, and Mel Gibson has never gone on record as disputing that, yet insisted all the way through the publicity for the Passion of the Christ that he in no way was anti-Semitic. Mel Gibson couldn't possibly fathom where the allegations that he was anti-Semitic would have come from. In no way could Mel Gibson conceive of what he might ever have said or done to make people think that he had a problem with Jews. Mystery solved! All right, there you go. Have fun getting a job, by the way. I'm sorry. All right, we should break here because we've got Lisa Goddard, ironically enough, in Israel. No, I'm sorry, Syria. So,
what are those countries? I mean, they're just lines on the map. I mean, they're not a real country.
That's the spirit. All right. Well, it's probably changed by now anyway. So, there you go. There's your religious nutcase watch. Back after this.
Getting in your car.